saw the schedule just the other day, and I was the following conversation actually happened in my house. I said to my family at the dinner table that I'm going up against Rabbi Marcus, and I can't imagine why anyone would come to my shiur. To which one of my children said, "Yeah, I can't either imagine why anyone comes to your shiur." Another child who wanted something from me said, "What are you talking about, Abba? I would always go to your shiur." And then a third child, who is 12 years old and for his entire life I have been the rabbi of his shul where he davens every Shabbos, said, "I don't know, I never heard either one of you speak." So, thank you very much for coming. The topic of the shiur is from the rabbi's desk. Tshuva edition, I think, is what we called it. So, I give a series of shiurim in a different yeshiva called "From the Rabbi's Desk," and the idea of the topic is that I just go through interesting shailas that people have asked me, and I find that real life is usually much more exciting than things that you could make up. So I wanted to go through maybe some shailas that we got. Anyone who's here who was in my high school shiur certainly has heard these kinds of shiurim from me before. We start every day in high school with shaila of the day. So this is like shaila of the day, except so I'm going to give you three shailas that I got relating to tshuva. They're not all recent. Some of them I've discussed in the past. And you'll tell me which one you want to talk about first, and we'll see how many of them we get to. So the three shailas that I got related to tshuva, these are all real cases that actually happened. So one shaila I got, I'll go backwards in terms of chronologically how they came in. So I got a shaila of an email. Someone emailed me saying that that he's a high school boy who is over bar mitzvah, and when he was younger, he used to like to steal things, and he would take things, all different kinds of things, from different kinds of people. And when he wanted something, not only would he steal, sometimes he would lie in order to get things. Like if he was in school and they were running a contest and you had to learn X amount of time or not be on a computer or a television X amount of time over vacation, then you're entered into a raffle and you get a prize. So he would always say that he was never on a computer or on a television the entire vacation, and that he learned every single minute of every single day and then some throughout the entire vacation, and he always won the prizes because he was always the winner of all these contests because he was such a big masman, except it was all a big fat lie. So he wants to know now, given the fact that he used to steal things out of his friends' backpacks and that he used to lie in order to get things, he wants to know now, as an adult, except not really an adult, but a halachic adult, as someone over the age of bar mitzvah, what does he have to do in terms of tshuva? First of all, does he have to return the items themselves that he stole if he has them? And if he doesn't have them, does he have to figure out what they would be worth now and return that money? And most importantly, he wants to know, does he have to also ask for mechila? Because he'd really rather not do that. That will be embarrassing to go to some people, I guess, who were his closest friends, or his elementary school principal, who was so proud of him. You know, not every kid learns 24 hours a day throughout the entire vacation. So he was so proud of him, and he still imagines in his head that they didn't see right through him. So he doesn't want to have to go and ask for mechila. Is he required to ask for mechila, and does he have to pay it back? That is shaila number one. I'm just going to mention all three, and then you'll tell me which one we should talk about. Another shaila I got a little bit before that, this was a couple of years ago, but I found it interesting. A guy that davened in my shul came over to me, and it was this time of year exactly. All tshuva shailas come at this time of year because hopefully people are thinking about tshuva. Hopefully people are thinking about tshuva, and tshuva shailas are always very interesting because they always come with a story. If someone is doing tshuva for something and thinking about it, then usually it's something significant. So this person was not about tshuva, but it's about a halacha that's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, sort of about halachas Koron Shulchan Aruch, about Erev Yom HaKippurim. And that is the issue of mechila. But when I talk about mechila, I'm not talking about the mechila of Erev Yom HaKippurim, but mechilas mamon. What happened was, this fellow lent someone $10,000 a number of years ago. And the person said it was a six-month loan. The person was supposed to pay back 6 months later. called him back 6 months later. The guy said, I'm sorry, I just don't have the money. I invested it in a business. The business went, didn't go well. I just don't have it. I'll pay you back. Give me another few months. And he kept on calling him back every few months. Kept on calling him back. And the guy kept on pushing him off, saying, no, I just don't have it. I just need more time. And eventually, he stopped calling. He stopped pressing. He wrote a prosbul every Shemitah that came. It was 10 years ago. And now, 10 years later, he's sitting there Erev Rosh Hashanah thinking to himself, the guy's never going to pay me back. I know that it's been 10 years. He's not going to pay me back. So I might as well, I don't want him to go into the Yom HaDin, have to face HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and have to go to, get a bad judgment because he owes me $10,000. So I am hereby mochel him. And he said, I'm mochel any money that he owes me. The goodness of his heart, he figured he wasn't getting the money anyway. Why should that guy go to Gehenna on his account? And then Rosh Hashanah came. And it was a 3-day yantiv, and 3 days of mail piled up. And he opens up his mail after Rosh Hashanah, and in the mail there's a check for $10,000 from this fellow. So now he has a $10,000 check in hand, but he was already mochel the $10,000. So does he have a right to cash this check without first checking with the other fellow whether he wants to give him a matana of $10,000 that he no longer owes? Or do we assume the mechila doesn't work? What do we assume about this? Is he allowed to keep the money? That was shaila number two. Shaila number three, going back even a couple of years before that, I'm just trying to pick the most entertaining tshuva shailas I got. Shaila number three is someone very close to me, owns an apartment in Yerushalayim, and they were having... they have a neighbor who takes care of their apartment, who helps them out a lot. And the neighbor, very often, when this person lives in America, so they don't really go to their apartment all that often, so you need people taking the mail for you, letting a painter when they need painting, and, friendly neighbors. So they had a neighbor who lives there all year round, and who always helps take care of their apartment. So they give the neighbor the key. The neighbor keeps food in their freezer, some chickens and whatever in their freezer for long-term storage, and they were having breakfast one morning in Yerushalayim with a family friend, and they told the family friend, listen, if you need to get our apartment, the neighbor has the key. His name is, and said the name of the neighbor. And the family friend said, wait, what's your neighbor's name? And he said the name again. And the family friend started barking like a chicken. Bark, bark, bark. And they said, are you okay? Is this like some sort of seizure? And he said, yeah, I'm fine. Just what's your neighbor's name again? And again he said the name. And again he started barking like a chicken. They said, okay, this is ridiculous. What's going on? So he said, well, your neighbor is Mr. Purdue. And they said, what are you talking about? Well, you remember years ago, there was a big scandal in Muncie. You guys might even be too young to... You remember? There was a big big scandal in Muncie, and there was someone who had sold a lot of... it was a very frum guy, and had a store, a butcher shop, where he sold a lot of chickens, and he was found to be repackaging Purdue chickens or something like that, and passing them off as kosher. And his family knew nothing about it. He raised a family of phenomenal B'nai B'nos Torah. I know one of his sons personally. He's a Rebbe in the Yeshiva in the Five Towns. Really an exceptional, exceptional Rebbe and a Ben Torah. Really, really special family. They had no idea what he was up to. And his wife asked for a divorce. He divorced his wife. And he ran away somewhere never to be heard from again. And they found him across the hall from this close family friend of mine. That's who their neighbor is, who stores his chickens in their freezer. So what's the shaila? There's no major shaila. What's the shaila? So the shaila was that they noticed, well, the guy's remarried, and they're always hosting people. They're hosting yeshiva boys, they're hosting seminary girls, they're always hosting people at their house. They're a very open home, and they wanted to know, should they be calling these yeshivas and seminaries and saying, do you know who you're sending the kids to, allowing them to eat by? You can't trust this guy. You should not be. Or should they just let it be? And how do they interact with the fellow? How do you interact with someone who has such a skeleton in his closet? And should they speak to the wife and inform her? Or do you assume that the wife already knows because she has Google. So he didn't change his name. It's a very common name, but still, how do you deal with something like this? So these are our three shilohs. Again, the child who feels bad about stealing, the teenager who feels about the fact that he stole when he was a child, the guy who was mochel the $10,000 and then received the check, and the Mr. Purdue. So any requests of which one to do first? Number two?
Three.
I love doing that because, you know, what was the movie? I think it was like Shrek. Where number two, Saya. Okay, so I guess, well, did you say number two because you've heard number three from me already?
I have, yes.
Yeah, I've heard number three from you. But what?
Remember this one in Eretz Yisrael like 5 years ago.
5 years? Oh, okay. But I don't think it was recorded. So I'm always, people always ask me, will you say a shiur that you've recorded once? I'm like, I don't go in with the assumption that someone has listened to every single shiur I've ever given them on NYU Torah. I'd be impressed if someone did. I gave it in shiur to you. I should do number three then.
Number two.
Oh, do number two. I gave number three and shared to you. Okay, so do number two. Okay, we should probably learn at some point tonight. So let's do that. So number two is the one about the about Binyamin with the mechila. I said the guy's name, about the guy who's mochel the $10,000. That yes. Okay. So. So it's interesting. This shaila. When I got this shaila, I was so excited because I'm a big fan of the shailas that Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein discusses, and I always assume that he makes his stuff up, like, you know, pulled from the headlines kind of. Are you familiar with Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein's farm? Va'arevna, chashuk echamet. So I always assumed he makes stuff up. So I said, wow, this is like a real Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein shaila. So I sent it to him, and he sent me back a tshuva the next day. So he told me that it was going to be printed in the upcoming Chashuk Echemer on Nedarim, which it was, but I got the Chashuk Echemer when we learned Nedarim, and I compared it to the original Tshuva he sent me. The original Tshuva he sent me had half of what he put into Chashuk Echemer. He had more Chashuk Echemer, so he added to it later. So apparently it was a shaila that he was thinking about for some time. I thought it was an interesting one. So let's go through this Mechila shaila. In general, if you're going to be Mochel, if you're going to be mochel a chov, someone owes you money and you want to be mochel them, well, you know what, let me put it to you. What are the issues over here? What halachas? Where do I open up in Shulchan Aruch to figure out the answer to this shaila? Choshem Mishpat, okay, good. We're good. But like, what are the halachic issues that need to be studied? Which simin? Like, where am I looking? What do I need to figure out over here? Mechila b'taos is a significant issue over here. Do we assume that the whole mechila was based on a mistaken premise? We may also want to look at any other weakness in the mechila, meaning if we want the guy to be able, since I said his name already, we want Binyamin to be able to keep this money, so we're going to want to look for weaknesses in the mechila. If there's anything wrong with this mechila, so mechila b'taos is one angle to take. What other angles can we take?
There's many people who love this, but you'd be able to also... That
from you? I don't believe it.
There's another form of obligation that he has to even post mechila, which would allow him the lender to keep the money either way.
Well, what do you mean? In that even after mechila, there may still be a mitzvah of priyas palchov.
Like in Kimei the Rabbinah, we have a similar concept that even though the guy doesn't get both punishments, so he'll still have
to be yotzei de shemayim. Right. Okay. So the meaning there may be, which is a very important point, Josh is making, that even if the mechila is good, if we fail to chisel away at the strength of that mechila, and the mechila is binding, the mechila stands. But maybe even if the mechila is good, there's some sort of obligation to pay it back, and maybe that's enough reason to keep the check. That, what we're then going to have to figure out is if that's enough reason to keep the check. Is it enough reason to keep the check without consulting with the other person?
If it came in the mail, maybe it left before he was mobile.
Ah, we have to figure out the timing of how all of this worked out. So good. So all of these things are what we have to discuss. So first I want to discuss the power of such a mechila. Now, I assumed when Binyamin told me this story that his mechila went something like this. He was davening Shemon Esrei, and he started thinking about, you know, all everything going on in his life, and he started thinking about, you know, he wants the Ribbono Shel Olam to be mevater with him, so he's going to be mevater with someone else. So he had in mind that he's going to be mochel. I assumed that that's the way it worked. That it was complete mechila b'machshava. That's what I assumed the case was. So my first angle was, does mechila b'machshava alone work? Does mechila require dibur? So it happens to be the Shulchan Aruch paskins in Choshen Mishpat that mechila works without a kinyan. You don't need to make a kinyan in order for a mechila schov to be binding. However, there is a discussion in the Achronim on the Nosikel and the Shulchan Aruch. The Ktzos has a discussion. He quotes from the Meskeres HaShulchan that Mechila can even work b'machshava, meaning not only do you not need a kinyan, you don't even need to say anything. You can just have in mind that you're being mochel, and that's a Mechila, and that's perfectly fine as a Mechila. However, the Ktzos himself disagrees. And the Ktzos says, no, Mechila must be bedibur. Machshava alone doesn't have to be enough. Does not suffice. It has to be bedibur. But the Ktzos implies, if you look carefully, the Ktzos implies that even though it has to be bedibur, he implies at least that it doesn't have to be bedibur to the other party. Because that was my second thought, that even if somehow such a mechila can work, doesn't the other party have to know about the mechila in order for it to work? I mean, can you just be mochel people without them knowing about the mechila, and then that's a binding mechila that you're going to be held to? Or do we assume, since there are two people involved, the mechila is only meaningful if both people are aware of the mechila? What would you say, Misvara? Do you need both people to be aware of a mechila in order for a mechila to work? I would have thought so, right? Give me a raya, not so. So what do we do on Erev Yom Kippur? Some people every night before they go to sleep, they're mochel anyone who, right, before Kriya Shema, right, by Kriya Shema Lamita. So maybe that doesn't work for Mammon, only for things that they have done against it. Okay, good, could be. Yeah. What?
Can
it be considered zachla who's zocha for who shalom b'fanav? So you're being konev, but zachla who's shalom b'fanav is a kinyan, right? That you have to make a kinyan for him, you have to do something over here. There's no kinyan. It's just you're saying that the chov is that doesn't exist. I don't know if you could apply zachin in that case. I'm not sure.
Going back to the Kirch Malabita one, in the Ribbono Shel Olam, one of them is Ben Mamuno.
Ah, right. Okay. See how often I say it. So, so if one of them is Ben Mamuno, right? So it sounds like it should work, but you could argue that it may work, but it may not be binding. Meaning that given that that's the best option, because you don't confront people, you don't know who all the people are that wronged you, and you just want to be a good guy, and you just want to be a mevater, so you say it because it works to some level. I mean, we have such a concept in tshuva in general, for example, that there, when we say like tshuva doesn't work for something, so you might as well not do tshuva at all. I gave a shiur in DRS yesterday, and I spoke about how the Rambam has a whole chapter of Hilchus Tshuva where the Rambam goes through Chav Dalet Dvarim HaMa'akvim Es Tshuva. You know, there's a whole chapter of Hilchus Tshuva that discusses the 24 things you can't do tshuva for. 24 things you can't do tshuva for is like so jarring. If you actually read the Rambam's Hilchus Tshuva, you can't do tshuva for. Tshuva works for everything. It works for Gili Arayos. It works for everything. And now there are things you can't do tshuva for, 24 of them. So it doesn't mean that you can't do tshuva for any of them. What it means is that, well, for some of them, it means that it's extremely challenging to do tshuva for. For example, Machti Asarabim. You caused dozens, hundreds of people to sit. How are you going to find every single person that you are machti? You give a psak and you're a big posek, and you give a psak laheter when something is really usher, and you don't realize, or you sell trade for chickens to an entire community, and you have no idea who was passing through town one time, who had a chasna at the wedding hall in Muncie, and you know, and ate from those chickens. You have no idea. There's no way you're going to be able to track everybody down. But it's not that you can't do tshuva, it's that it's nearly impossible to do full tshuva for certain averos. One of the parents actually got very upset at me for saying that there are things you can't do tshuva for. as if like I made up the Rambam, but he got very, very upset. He said, you know, what kind of message are you sending the kids? No, the point is that you can't do, there are things, you know, there are things that you have to suffer, and the Rambam goes through, you know, that you have to suffer Yisur in order for the Tshuva to be, and Chil Hashem, although the Rabbi Yon writes in Shari Tshuva that if Talmud Torah could be Mechaper even for Chil Hashem, that you can, along with Tshuva, Talmud Torah and Tshuva are very much connected. It's a Shmuz for a different time, but actually, it's really a good shmooze for now, but not for this year. So it could be that there are levels of mechila, that being mochel, something when the person's not there, may be meaningful, but not binding, where you're not going to be allowed to keep the check. So Rav Shechter thought that given that it's a machlokas, maskaras, or shulchan, and ketzos, so I would say that the guy can say kimli. That the Binyamin can say, Kimli, I hold like the Ketzos, that it doesn't work unless you do Bedibur, and therefore I'm going to keep the money. Why do I have to give it back? In general, by Dina Mamnis, you have such a thing that a person could say Kimli if he's holding on to the money of his Mukhsar. So the Rav Shechter thought not so. He thought the Ketzos is rejected the Halacha, that we hold like the Maskaris HaShulchan, that the Nesivus says like the Maskaris HaShulchan, and therefore we reject the Ketzos HaHalacha, and we should assume that the Mechila works even b'machshava. It happens to be when I went back to the guy and I said to him, you know, we have to work out some of the details of how this happened, because Mechila b'machshava may work. He said, well, who said anything about a machshava? I didn't do mechil machshava. I said it. I said the words. It wasn't middle Shmona Esrei. It was right before Milcha and Rosh Hashanah, Erev Rosh Hashanah. I said, sitting in shul, in my makom in shul, I am mochel that guy who owes me $10,000. I said it to myself, but I said it. So it wasn't just machshava. It was bedibur. What about that other angle? So Rav Shechter thought that the angle of the other guy doesn't know about the fact that you're mochel. To me, that seemed like a very strong svara. I was gratified to just learn about 10 minutes ago when I finally took a look at the Chashukei Chemed, because I assumed the whole time it just Rav Zilberstein wrote what he sent me in the tshuva. Then I just took a look at the Chashukei Chemed. I had saved it as a PDF on my phone. And I took a look about 10 minutes before the share started that Rav Zilberstein quotes an Aruch HaShulchan. That there's an Aruch HaShulchan that says explicitly in Chosh Mishpatzim Reish Mem Aleph Siv Dalet that if the Loved doesn't know about the Mechila, then the Mechila doesn't work. That a Mechila could work even, question whether it can work even b'machshava, but the Lov has to know that you had that machshava. I don't know how he would know that you have that machshava, but a Mechila, since there are two parties involved, the other party has to know about it. But let's assume like Rav Shechter for a second. So I asked Rav Shechter, so Nu, what's the next step? If assuming the Mechila did work, so the guy has to give back the money, he said it depends. There's such a thing called the Mechila Betos. So how do we gauge whether this is a Mechila B'Taos? I mean, a Mechila B'Taos is it was done with a mistaken premise. He didn't know that. What? What didn't he know when he made the Mechila? One possibility is he didn't know that it was in the mail. Now, if that's the case, it was already in the mail and he didn't know that it was in the mail, but it actually was in the mail, I think that's a Dover Pashat that that's a Mechila B'Taos. There's no way, had he known, that the check was already written, the account was funded, the check was written, and it was already in the mail on the way to his house, there's no way he was going to be Mochel $10,000. The question is, can we assume it's a Mechila B'Taos even if the check was not yet in the mail? What would be the angle there?
He thought the guy would have paid him back.
You thought the guy was never going to pay you back. So you were mochel. Had you known that he actually was going to pay you back, then you never would have been mochel. The problem with that is, then every mechila, you could say, on some levels of mechila, because there's a chance by every mechila that the guy might pay you back. When you're mochel, you're saying that given the chances, given the fact that the overwhelming odds that he's not going to pay me back, you know, as things are now, what's going to be no let in the future, you know, Mechila B'Taos has to be a toast of what was in the moment. The guy's going to pay me back in the future. That's in the future. That's not right now. At the time that he was Mochel, if the money wasn't in the mail, Rav Shechter thought that that's not a Mechila B'Taos. Rav Zilberstein thought it's still a Mechila B'Taos. Why?
No, I mean, can you say that in this case, he was doing Mechila so that the other person can receive Kapara?
Oh, good. So Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein suggested four svaras to let the guy keep the money. One svara was, just finishing off the Mechila B'Taos point, is that it's a Mechila B'Taos even if the check wasn't in the mail. Why? Because the way things work is people don't just, you know, snap their fingers and $10,000 appear. You know, if it took him so long to pay back and he didn't have the money, he was having trouble in business, so clearly he was saving up over a certain amount of time in order to be able to pay back in one lump sum. So he was saving, putting away, whatever, a couple hundred dollars a month for a while. Had Binyamin known that the guy was putting away money for such a long time and was planning, was actually had the process, had started the process of setting aside the money in order to pay him back, which must have started before he was mochel, because it was just a few days earlier, so that process must have begun by that time, that's already a mechila b'tos. That's what Zilberstein wanted to suggest. That's one svari he wanted to suggest. You can question it, because that's not really the process of paying back. He's just putting some of his paycheck into savings. And what he's going to do with it is a decision that he, you know, ultimately makes later. Until he writes that check, that decision is not really made. So to argue that that's a decision that's already made, you could certainly argue with that svara. But similar to what Josh was saying, Zilberstein wanted to suggest something else, which I didn't agree with. I didn't think is, but maybe there's, so you could bring a riot to this idea. He wanted to suggest the guy was never mochel the chov. The guy was mochel the onesh and shemayim. He wasn't mochel the chov. I have trouble with that, because I don't know that we have the ability to be mochel the onesh and shemayim. No, I don't know if we have the, that's not our business. The Ribbono Shel Olam figure out the onesh and shemayim. The guy, what prompted him to be mochel the chov was the onesh and shemayim. That's what prompted it. But I don't know that you can call that he wasn't mochel the chov.
Isn't Zilberstein saying that maybe that he, again, that he wanted to be mochel the onesh and shemayim, not necessarily that his ability to, but that was his kavana.
Right, but the way to be mochel that onesh was through being mochel the chov. No, that's what he was. That's what the guy actually said, is that he's mochel the chov.
I think the payment is now, or the mechilas chov is now sort of redefined by the intention. In other words, being that he intended to only give up that mechila in order that that person can ultimately receive his kapara, so then once the guy is able to receive his kapara a different way, the chov no longer, the mechilas chov no longer stands.
I mean, the guy always has the ability to receive his kapara a different way by paying back the money. But I didn't think he was going to, and now he did. I don't know. I'm not sure that he has the ability to do that. Yeah.
We're also assuming there's an onesh not paying back money. What's the law? What's that?
In Shemayim, I assume there's an onesh. Okay. Meaning down here, there's no onesh. Down here, you just got to pay back the money, and you have to ask mechila, by the way, from the person that you hurt. Just might as well overlap a little bit with the shaila of the guy who wanted to do tshuva for stealing when he was younger, and he wanted to know if he has to ask mechila. The Rambam Paskins in Hilchos Tshuva, in the second paragraph of Hilchos Tshuva, that when you're mazik someone, when you chovel someone, when you mazik b'mamono, not only do you have to return the money, you have to also ask mechila. But in Shemayim, certainly there's an onesh. Down here, there's no onesh. You just ask mechila and you give back the money. But in Shemayim, there's certainly an onesh for it.
Does the Rambam apply even if he doesn't know that he was damaged by it?
Asking for mechila, so that's interesting. There's a stira in the Rambam. The Rambam Hilchos Tshuva says that you have to ask for mechila when you stole money. It's not enough to return the money. The Rambam Chovel Mazik says that you just have to return the money. He doesn't say that you have to ask for mechila. So Lecha Mishnah on the spot in Chovel Mazik asks the stira, and he says that it must be, and this is the way Rav Eliyashiv assumes and many other Achronim assume, that it must be that if you caused the guy some hurt, It bothered him and it hurt him emotionally in some way, it caused the guy agmas nefesh, then you need to ask for mechila. But if you didn't cause him any agmas nefesh, he didn't even know it was missing, he didn't know it was gone, then you don't have to ask for mechila. The question is how you touch up that lecha mishnah exactly. What does it mean he didn't know? The way I understood it was, he never knew that anything was missing. He never knew that he was robbed. For example, the guy told the yeshiva that just overlapping the questions over here, the guy told the yeshiva, I learned for 37 hours every 24 hours, I learned for 37 of them, you know, throughout the entire vacation, and therefore I win the, I don't know what they give out for prizes, the iPad. So, right, I win the, whatever it is, that I for the prize. So, in that case, the yeshiva was never hurt by it, because they never felt bad about it. There was never agmas nefesh. The other party who was supposed to win never felt agmas nefesh about being cheated, because he didn't know that he was cheated. He thought that, honest to goodness, this fellow learned 37 hours a day. But if you're dealing, so if you're gonna say it that way, so then it would have to be that they were mamish never hurt by it. But what if I stole something out of the guy, out of someone's knapsack without them noticing that I stole it? So they don't know that I stole it, they think they lost it. But it's very upsetting to lose things. And a person might have come home and looked through his backpack and said, you know what? I don't know what I did with it. I'm so irresponsible. And maybe their parents, they came home from school that day, and the parents said, I can't believe you lost the trip money again. Every time I send you trip money, you always lose it, because the kid next to him is always stealing it. But it caused agmas nefesh. So you could argue with Lech Mishnah saying is that if it causes any agmas nefesh, you need to get mechila. Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein, I asked that child to Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein also, he thought that's not what it is, that it's not about agmas nefesh. The guy has to know that you stole it from him. I don't know why he thought that way, but he thinks that the guy has to know that you stole it from him in order for it to be an actual something that you would actually have to ask mechila for. But going back to our case, so we're trying to come up with ways that maybe this mechila is not binding. We suggested mechila betalos, but that l'chora only works if the check was in the mail already. And in this case, it happens to be he has no idea if the check was in the mail. Is there in the mail? Is there Rosh Hashanah? It wasn't. Why did he have no idea? Because he came to shul early, I guess. I don't know. He thought maybe the guy dropped it in the mail a minute before Rosh Hashanah. I don't know. He had no idea if it was. You could see the stamp on the envelope. You say. So he would know when it was mailed. It was definitely mailed out of Rosh Hashanah. Maybe he wasn't sure the timing of the day that it was mailed. I don't know. I'm not sure. Another possibility we said is that maybe you're mochel the onesh, you're not mochel the chov. I'm not really sure if that's really a valid angle, but that's a possible angle. Another possibility, Rav Zilberstein suggested, is that Priyas Bal Chov is a mitzvah, and this is similar to what Josh Kaufman was saying before, that even if you're mochel, the mechila works, but Priyas Bal Chov is still a mitzvah. So he's still, and what's the mitzvah? Rashi in Ksuv Daf Pei Vav says the mitzvah of Priyas Bal Chov is Hin Tzedek, that Hin Shalachat Tzedek, that when you say that you're going to do something, you got to do it. So when you borrow money, you say that you're going to pay back the money. So in order to be an honest person, you actually have to pay back the money. So you're going to take away the opportunity to do the mitzvah from this guy? He's doing the mitzvah. Let him do the mitzvah. He wants the mitzvah.
Can't say the mechila is paying back money.
So I thought, yeah, Priyas Bal Chov is a mitzvah. There's no longer Bal Chov. Once you're mochel, it's Bal Chov. There's no more Bal Chov.
Yeah. That would be telling how mechila works, no? Doesn't that exactly his point? Isn't that
mechila? No, mechila definitely takes away the Chov. It really is telling you what Priyas Bal Chov is. Is Priyas Bal Chov only when there's Bal Chov, or is Priyas Bal Chov purely defined by Rashi's Hin Tzedek?
What I'm saying is mechila is about the way that mechila works. Either the mitzvah was accomplished or there is no more mitzvah anymore.
Well, either way, you wouldn't be able to keep the check then, because it was either the mitzvah was accomplished with the mechila, or there's no more mitzvah because of the mechila. So if there's no more mitzvah, you shouldn't be able to keep the check. Another possibility of Zilberstein suggests is that ganavim in general don't want to be ganavim. They're ganavim because they have pressures, and they give in to the Yetzer Hara. So, in general, someone who's in business wants to be able to pay back all of his chovos. Why does he want to pay back all of his chovos? Not because he's a good guy, but because he wants to be trusted in business. The most important thing for a person to have in business is a shem tov, that people should be able to trust him, and that people should know that they can that his handshake means is good, his word is good, and that he can be trusted. So this guy sent you a $10,000 check. So Zilberstein argued he wants you to cash the check because even if you were mochel him, he doesn't want that to be his reputation, that he never paid the $10,000 and therefore you had to be mochel him 10 years later. He wants the reputation that he actually paid back. So he wants you to pay it back. So I said he wants to pay it back. So I thought also that was very weak. Yeah, he might, but there's a simple way to find out. Pick up the phone, call him and ask him. Would you rather have a shem tov or would you rather have $10,000? And if he says I'd rather have a shem tov, great, so then you keep the $10,000. If he says he'd rather have $10,000, then he'd rather have $10,000. I don't think you can make assumptions like that. It's an umdana. You make an umdana is when you can't find out what the reality is. I thought over here you can find out the reality. Then Rav Zilberstein suggested another tzad that he didn't send me in the tshuva, but it is in the sefer, that... And I just glanced at it before I came, so I don't know what his rayas were, but he had some sort of raya that holding a check, you could be chozer on the mechila. That once you're holding a check, you could be chozer on the mechila. Because a check is better than a shtar, and he has a machloka somewhere, whether you need a shvua to be chozer on the mechila in order to collect with a shtar, but a check is better than a shtar. A check, you just go and you deposit it. So he thinks that you're allowed to be chozer on the mechila. So he thought that even if the mechila was binding, you're allowed to be chozer. I don't know. In general, with dinei mamonos type of issues, I always try to advise to err on the side of caution. Dinei mamonos is something that I think in our day and age, people are a little too lenient with. Mori Virabi, Rav Shechter Shlita, often says that we need to start teaching people in high school and in college that it's also to steal, that it's also to cheat, that there are people, the jails are filled with Orthodox Jews who say, no one ever told me you're not allowed to steal from Goyim. You know, no one ever told me you're not allowed to cheat on your taxes. No one ever told me. And the truth is, in some yeshivas, no one ever told them. So it's. I think it's important to, you know, when the Rambam writes that the Shvil Azov, you know, the way to get to the right path is if you find that society or yourself are pulled in one direction, you sort of have to go in the other direction. I think our society is being pulled way too much in the direction of dishonesty, and we should be super honest and pull ourselves in the other direction. That's the general mahalich. But when you're dealing with someone who's having financial trouble and he has a $10,000 check in his hand, it's very hard to tell someone like that unless the Ikar Adin. So what you would say is that the Ikar Adin, if you believe the Ikar Adin is that he's allowed to keep it, the Ikar Adin is probably that you're allowed to keep it. I would recommend you give a phone call. You say, funny story. I was actually just mochel. I could really use this money. But I was actually just mochel. So let me know if you want me to rip up the check. I don't know. I'm not sure. I think this guy happens to be a super honest guy. I think he actually did call the guy, and the guy said keep it. So he was able to keep the money in the end of the day. If I recall, that's what happened. So we have a few more minutes. We can do one of the other shilas.
Three.
Okay. So the chicken shila. I'll do this quickly. We have to. What this really boils down to is two things. First of all, is tshuva possible for an avera like this? And if tshuva is possible, can we accept that the guy did tshuva? Because if you have a guy who's machlin nevelos and treifos mistama, you shouldn't be allowing yeshiva boys and seminary girls to go eat at the house of someone who's machlin nevelos and treifos, unless you come up with some other svara why they can be. So we have to figure out: is he still someone who's machlin nevelos and treifos? So is tshuva possible for an avera like this? And can we, down here in this world, accept someone's tshuva and say, he's a bal tshuva, he looks like a bal tshuva, looks like he must have done tshuva. So, is tshuva possible? What do you say? Something like this. This is an afna gemara in Sanhedrin. The gemara Masech Sanhedrin says, this case, it's not the first time it happened, and it won't be the last. It wasn't the last, it's happened again since then in Los Angeles. So this exact case, you have a butcher, a tabach, that was selling nevelos and treifos, and the mitosi yadei, they found that he was selling nevelos and treifos, so they fired him from his job, which is the prudent thing to do. You can't let him continue to be a butcher. Pasle Rav Nachman va'avri. Rav Nachman says he's pasle edus, and he's fired. Also, Rabbi Masi v'tufrei, so what did he do? He did tshuva. You know how they used to do tshuva? There were outward expressions of tshuva. So he grew his hair long and his fingernails long and he was unkempt and he was, you know, they used to do such a thing called tshuva samishkal. You ever hear of tshuva samishkal? Like if you do this avera, so you got to fast this number of fasts, then whip yourself this amount of times, roll around in the mud with the pigs, and like all sorts of like prescribed, you know, for each avera. That's my favorite line in that famous Nodeb Yehuda, the Nodeb Yehuda Madura Kama or Chaim Simulam and Hey, where the Nodeb Yehuda was asked the Shaila about the Yeshiva Bachar, who was a very dedicated masmid. It's just one thing, he had this little avera on the side that he was having an affair with his future mother-in-law for 3 years. So he wanted to know how to do tshuva for it. So Nodeb Yehuda said, a guy said, and you go easy on the tshuva samishkal. You got to go easy because I'm such a masmin, I'm so shvach. I don't know if with all my asmada in Torah, I don't know if I'll be able to withstand much of a tshuva samishkal. And Nodeb Yehuda said, tshuva samishkal? If you lived kishnos misushalach, you would not have enough time to do tshuva samishkal for the averus that you did. So that's one of the. So the Rebbe tells him, we don't do tshuva that way anymore. But that was the way they used to do tshuva. So he grew his hair long and he grew his nails long and he was unkempt and he was tzubrachin. And so Savrav Nachman Lachshuri. Rav Nachman says, okay, let's be machshir him. So Rav says, you can be machshir because of that. Maybe it's a harama. He obviously wants his job back, so he's going to do whatever it takes. So he's going to look like he did tshuva. So Lamaita Kante, Sigmar says, how does one do tshuva for this? He's got to go to a place where no one recognizes him, and have the same nisayon again, have a trefa, and throw it in the garbage instead of selling it. without realizing that anyone's watching. That's how you do tshuva. And then he's going to be kosher leidos again, and then he can go back into business. Problem is, translating that to our times, is there a place on earth where no one recognizes him? No, because everyone has Google. Except for his wife, that's a different story. Everyone has Google. So everyone recognized him. It's hard. He was in a shul in Yerushalayim, and someone started yelling at him and berating him just recently. People know there. You never. There's nowhere you can go that nobody's going to recognize you. So what? So now he's stuck. So he can never do tshuva. So I think it's important to realize there are different levels of tshuva, like we said before. There's tshuva to the point where you're going to be kosher leidos. Tshuva to a point where we're going to let you go back into business. And there's tshuva to a point where we could assume that you're living on the straight and narrow now. Mikano laba. Whether you got kapara for everything you did, you machti as a rabbin, did you find every single person? He sends this heartfelt letter to the Mansi community, sent for years after this scandal. A heartfelt letter, it seemed like a heartfelt letter, you know, expressing this incredible regret. So maybe we assumed, okay, now he's on the straight and narrow. Furthermore, where is he going to buy a tray for chicken in Israel? I mean, you can get in Yerushalayim, you can get without the best hashgacha, but unless he goes to the shuk, you know, chances are he's not doing the same thing anymore. Furthermore, he may not have a cheskas kashrus, but he's remarried, and his wife has a cheskas kashrus, so maybe her cheskas kashrus is good enough. Even if we're not going to like his tshuva, there happens to be a fascinating discussion in Achronim why it is that Beis Nishalmata doesn't accept tshuva. And it's not for the reason that you think. Meaning, why is it? Pick the following case. Reuven murders Shimon in cold blood. Reuven's a really bad guy, by the way. So Reuven murders Shimon in cold blood. He's always the guy doing all these terrible things in every example. In front of Edom, Hasra'a, everything. He's the lucky winner. He figured out how to be the once every 7 years or every 70 years where Bezin's actually going to chop him and they're going to kill him. Edom, Hasra'a, you have the whole thing. And the Bezin, they schlep him in front of Bezin. They say, Reuven, you're accused of killing Shimon. Did you do it? He says, no. What do you mean, no? We have two Edom, Hasra'a. You said, I've all PK and I don't care. And I'm of sane mind and I'm doing it anyway. And you went and you did it. He said, no. That was the guy I was 20 minutes ago. But since then, I've done tshuva. I found God, and I found religion, and I've done tshuva. So what does Beis Din say to him? Clever, cute, we're going to kill you. Why? Because Beis Din doesn't accept tshuva. So why doesn't Beis Din accept tshuva? So I always thought, well, Beis Din doesn't accept tshuva because how does Beis Din know if you did tshuva? Like this guy in the Gemara, grew his fingernails long, grew his hair long. How do I know that that's tshuva? You know, the guy who was selling trade for chickens looked very frum when he was doing that too. How do I know if he did tshuva? But many of the Achronim point out, that can't be the reason. Because when it comes to psulei edus, we do accept tshuva. A guy grew up being Michal Shabbos his whole life. And he went to NCSY, was inspired, became religious, went to yeshiva. Now he's Rav in Moshav Matzisyahu or something, and he's a big gadol. You're not going to trust him as an aide at your wedding? No, we do trust him as a. How do I know? Maybe secretly he's a. How do I know that he did tshuva? That's a bad example because by the time Rav left was bar mitzvah, he was already firmer than anyone in this room probably. But still, take someone who did tshuva later on. How do I know that he really did tshuva? So, but we do, we accept it. We accept the tshuva. So it's not that we don't know. That's not the reason that we don't accept tshuva in Beis Nishalmata. Nodvida says we don't accept tshuva in that same tshuva. The Nodvida says we don't accept tshuva in Beis Nishalmata because the whole system would be a joke then. And it would never serve as a deterrent from sinning. The whole idea is when you're about to kill someone, you're supposed to think, well, wait a second, if I do this, they might kill me. Maybe I won't kill someone. You're about to be Mechal Shabbos, stoning doesn't sound so comfortable, I'm not going to be Michal Shabbos. But if you know that you can just go in front of the basin and say, ah, don't worry, tshuva, well then the whole system falls apart. It's never going to serve as a deterrent. That Nodibudu assumes that it's supposed to serve as a deterrent on the level of fear, which is also very questionable. Chida questions that Moshe writes that that's clearly not the kind of deterrent that's supposed to be, because how often do we actually kill someone? You have to be the world's biggest idiot to get caught and actually, you know, get killed by Beis Din. So it's impossible that it's meant to be a deterrent on that level. Ramesh says, no, it serves as a deterrent in that you're sitting in a classroom in the fourth grade learning Chumash, and they're telling you that if you're Mechal Shabbos, a person is Chayiv Skila. So it deters you because you think, you mentally file away. Chil Shabbos, really bad. Not that you actually think it's going to happen to you, but it deters you because now you have an understanding of the gravity of the Aveira. For whatever reason, Beis Din Shalmata doesn't accept tshuva. However, when it comes to being machshir a person going forward, it seems that tshuva would work. Halach lemaisa in this case, at the time that this shaila came through, I was not coming to yeshiva very often, to YU very often, so I asked Rabbi Shai Shechter to hack around the Beis Medrash and get me some opinions from Gedolim, and he had Rabbi Neuberger, Rabbi Shechter, and he called Rabbi Asher Weiss for me. So he got three different opinions. Rabbi Shechter said, leave the guy alone. Stomach did tshuva already. Let him live. You know, you don't have to make a ruckus now. Everything is, it's so many years, leave him alone. He already had enough. And Rabbi Neuberger said, the guy is psychotic. You can't trust anything that this guy is doing. He looked from before. You don't want him influencing anyone. Call the yeshivas, call the seminaries, call everyone. And Rav Asher Weiss said, give it time. If it's been 5 years already, 5 years is enough. We could assume that he's already on the right path. We never give him ashkacha if he wanted to open the store. But give it time. So different shitos amongst the gedolim in terms of how to handle it. Have a gemar chasima tov, everybody. Thank you for coming again. Yeah.